All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you very much. And hello, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to welcome you back to the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. Today is our last meeting, believe it or not, in preparation of our presentation to the HITAC next week. So really like to thank Arian and David, our co-chairs, and all the task force members for their hard work over these past few months getting us to this point. So really appreciate it. I'm going to open up today's meeting with roll call, and I'll start with our co-chairs, Arian Malik.
Good morning and or afternoon.
David McCauley.
Present. Hello.
Ricky Bloomfield.
I'm here. Thanks.
Cynthia Fisher. Valerie Gray. Kim Jurgis. Edward June. Ken Kawamoto. Victor Lee.
Present.
Leslie Leonard. Glenn McDonald. Jack Poe. Raj Ratwani. Ram Sharam. Sasha Termot. And Andy Truscott.
Sorry, Ram Sriram was present.
Great. Thank you, Andy. And I know some members are joining us now, and I'll keep track of that for our attendance. And I'd like to turn it over to our co-chairs, Arian and David.
Hey. So, Mike, as you said, we have made a tremendous amount of progress. When I think back to the beginning of the work group, you know, we put together a set of prioritization input, put together a prioritization framework, prioritized our focus areas. In a time of vast disruption to what our priorities normally would have been based on the work that we've done in the last task force meeting, we heard from no fewer than four different topic areas, heard testimony on no fewer than four different topic areas. Got to a succinct set of recommendations and formatted them in a recommendations transmittal at least has the appearance of being coherent and useful, and hopefully actually is useful to Mickey and the rest of the ONC. I keep thinking Mickey and the ONC should be a pretty cool band. So our task today is to go through the PowerPoint deck that we're going to put in front of the advisory committee, the full advisory committee. It's mostly lifted straight out. It is lifted straight out of the transmittal letter. So it also gives us another chance to review the transmittal letter feedback. And then I trust that everybody's gotten the transmittal. And has been able to do a review of it, but if we have extra time, we can go back through the transmittal and do a last pass, last editing pass, last call there. We do need to wrap everything up. Mike, I think we need to send over the material on Tuesday over to the full advisory committee or Monday over to the full advisory committee?
Earlier is better. Do it because there is a vote, and the more they have time to review it, the more they will vote to approve.
Yeah, so it would be nice to clean all this whole thing out by tomorrow so that we can send a transmittal. We can send the transmittal over for the meeting on the 6th, I believe. The meeting is on the 9th. So it would be nice if we could send it out Monday morning or Friday afternoon for the meeting on the 9th. So let's try to make sure that we, consistent with the goal of getting as high quality recommendations without egregious typos as possible, let's make sure that we optimize for getting the advisor committee the final transmittal by no later than the weekend so that we can send it out Monday morning and ideally by Friday so we can send it out Friday afternoon. With that, let's go through the recommendations. So, we go through, as we saw last time, We go through our charge, membership, background, that includes the prioritization process that we used, the folks that we heard testimony from, and our high-level recommendations. Then we go into our full level of recommendations and then go into future considerations, which is the stuff that we punted. If we go into the next slide. So we skip over this. It's our charge, how we met. So next, this is who we are. I think we all know this. If we go, and if we go back one up.
Go back one. What happened?
Yes,
oh, no, there's Clem.
We do acknowledge the existence of Clem, and I think everybody's in the right job.
Everybody just double-check and make sure we've got your name and your job right, because there's several versions of this floating around that had dropped people as the membership waxed and waned. So looks good to me, but you're responsible for your own name.
I'm okay, too. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Clem. We do acknowledge that you exist and you have a job, so that's a useful thing. All right. Let's go on to the next slide. Yada, yada. We did our prioritization process. We heard a bunch of testimony. Let's go to the next one. All right. So here's we get into the meat of it. Most of the edits that we did were primarily just cleanup, making sure our high-level recommendations track with our detailed recommendations, a little reordering of our high-level recommendations. We were a little more nuanced in some of our topics. So as we get to some of the areas that we had some changes on, we'll do a little voiceover on what cleanup we did. So if we go on to the next slide.
And Aaron, I want to point out and thank Wanda for doing the renumbering and putting these in the right format for the committee.
Yep, both Wanda and Cassandra have put in a ton of work into getting
work.
The stage that we're at here. So definitely appreciative of both of them. Okie doke, nothing changed here since we got all the fire attributes right. So I'll just pause there and see if there's any feedback for this item. With that, let's go on to the next. Here we elided the broadly disseminated research model for instances, just for sake of not causing confusion. That was the main thing that we addressed. If we go on to the next slide. This is on terminology. And again, I don't think anything has changed here. Oh, yeah. So what changed here was transition the nation towards terminology meeting the policy through means including but not limited to licensing, working with terminology curators to align development with policy, or transition to alternate terminology standards. So not trying to be directive about what means are appropriate, but to list multiple means that could be achieved to address the policy outcomes. So that was the major change that we made here.
And we reorganized a tiny bit, I think, maybe from some earlier versions of the documents, in that the as close to the source of the data as possible got
That's
folded
right.
into this broad topic. I think we had it as a separate numbered item in a previous draft, but it's here.
That's right. We also mentioned UCOM, Loink and UCOM. Cynthia.
Hi, Erin. Thank you. I just have a question. And look, I'm not a data tech person, but as we look at all of these standards, and you know, one of the things that is near and dear to my heart, kind of comes along with my name, is price transparency, right, in healthcare. And as we look to all of this sharing of data, the laboratory data, and all across the system, I've collected input from many tech parsers, people that are parsing the data to show pricing from the hospitals. And we just did a study of 500 hospitals on looking at their pricing data. And, you know, from a patient perspective, in addition to all the data that gets shared across healthcare, researchers, developers, et cetera, as we move to price transparency, what's been really clear is there's no standard right now on how the pricing data is being transitioned. So as we look at imaging and the coming on board of laboratory data, coding, and standards, what I got from pulling together a task force separately of tech innovators that are coming up with mobile apps to be able to provide great shopping applications at hospitals, and this will also then be labs, is they're looking for a standard file format and even an example like CSV, you know, just something that's very simple that can be implemented by 2022 when the OPPS rule is updated for the hospital price transparency. But we could see where, my question is to you all on this task force, where are we covering just a really easily implementable standard that can go across anywhere in healthcare that will require that the machine-readable pricing files be disclosed in one standard file format? And we pick it as such as CSV. And the reason why we recommended CSV for the hospitals was that it is more defined in the insurance or the transparency and coverage rule, so it would be consistent, so that we could rapidly get to a place where all of us could shop on our mobile phones for care anywhere and get this data. So where do we see this in this task force and us bringing this forward that could be so easily implementable by January 1, 2022?
That's a really important comment, and thank you for it. You know, I do think the terminology recommendations that we're making additionally help price transparency. At least some of the issues historically have been cross-licensing of the procedural terminology to allow for example, consumer use. I think we should include in our future considerations this topic. Cynthia, as you might know, I actually have development teams that are helping hospitals provide price transparency, and you're correct that it is it's catch as catch can, there's a little bit of either people just making it up or doing shenanigans like hiding the data or making it hard to parse or removing it from in the robot.txt field from search. And indexing. So, I don't think we have enough time to go through the deliberation here. But Cynthia, what I'd recommend is that we include that as a future items section in our future items section. And then, as I would note that our terminology standards section does support price transparency and consumer transparency.
Where does it in the points that you're putting forward for this final full committee?
Sure.
About pricing transparency, you know, and I applaud you for whatever efforts you are doing to help the hospitals. And what we have found, we just studied 500 hospitals, and we found that only 20% are complying with the rule, putting the data up. Doesn't mean that it's up simply. And then the other 70% are providing incomplete fields and obfuscating. And
yep.
Then 10% are doing nothing of the 500 that we looked at. And so what we see is we actually worked really hard, and we're going to put forth standard recommendations that are easily implementable, that we connected with many, many different tech companies that are trying to parse this information now. And we basically have 10 simple points of what can be easily feasibly put in place by January 1, 2022 in the updated rule. And my concern is if we just put it for future consideration, the thing is that this can be done and released to the marketplace along with the insurance compliance of their rules starting January 2022. So once we have all that information, we could have true transparency. And for us to delay that when this could be simply presented and formatted, I think it'd be really great, you know, like, you know, and it's just easy things that can be done, right? Like defining a standard schema for disclosures with all names and data types, which, you know, comes from a directory of right? You know, so there are existing CMS directories, so why not just have it be all written out? So these are easily implementable standards, but I'd really like to recommend that if our committee could look at this putting easily implementable standards in place timely, that would be so cool.
Yep. No, thank you for that. And I actually have zero objection to including commentary here that ONC should evaluate standards for this. My only concern is that we're literally, you know, it's the 11th hour. It's the we're less than a, I think we're literally a week out from the HITECH presentation, and we haven't had any deliberation on this topic.
Yeah, I think that's kind of curious, don't you? I mean, the rule started in January, and I've gone to Mickey.
Yeah.
I've come into the HHS, and I find it very curious that there's all this obfuscation going on, and no one on, you know, I haven't heard anybody really asking for this to be implemented in, and, you know, the Wall Street Journal's reported on the obfuscation that's been intentional, you know, and, you know, so this is, like, so easy to actually get done, you know. So I think it's kind of curious that our committee hasn't come.
Well, yeah, and again, I would note that we went through a prioritization process and collected topic items, and I don't believe this topic came up, which, you know, I do think shame on us as a group for not considering it and contemplating it, but it literally didn't get into the input, so it didn't get through the prioritization process.
We had numerous meetings where we revisited our list of prioritization items, and this unfortunately didn't get raised by anyone. I think it would have easily gotten traction had it been raised.
I agree. Yep.
Haven't gotten.
Clem, I want to go to you. Your hand is raised.
I was just going to comment on Cynthia's. I usually agree 99% with her, and I don't disagree, but CSV, it'll be a mess, just like a PDF. Unless you got some other specs that can lock it down. I mean,
So Cynthia, here's my proposal to you, which is just you know, given the consideration that we're late in the process, if you could format a recommendation for consideration by the task force, and if we can get email-based approval of that recommendation today and tomorrow. Because we want to close out the report by Friday so we can get it out to the full committee, and get email-based roll call on it. I have no objection to going through that process.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm happy to do that. I think it would be intriguing to say, look, guys, if we could change the world of healthcare, especially in this time of crisis, the one place we could do it lower cost.
Yep.
And by giving the empowerment to the patients to be able to shop. And right now, you know, it's not so shoppable because of the pricing files are, you know, not in a standard format. And the plan names are being obfuscated. There's all sorts of things. But we have a 10-point way of what it can be done. And quite frankly, you know, CSV or JSON, right? But to be consistent so that as parsers are able to pull up from the insurance rule and the hospital rule, that we can actually get it done. You know, I think that's the big thing. And, you know, the other thing is just to require disclosure of full payer and plan names, right? Just to stop gaming it and just put the actual names in place. So these are easily doable thing. And what we're finding is a lot of the data fields also are not being filled. So there's like not applicable or, you know, they just leave them empty. And so they're not actually complying with the rule. So one is just posting the actual prices and allowing it to all be in a file. And CSV, Clem, was really because at a minimum, anybody could put that in a common file, standard file format, and just decide on one. And any tech parser can pull it up either from CSV or a JSON file, whatever. But we thought CSV because then a consumer could also look at it as well and log in and see those differences.
Yep.
And have it be downloadable.
Yep.
So I don't want to take up too much time here, but I just thank you all, and I'm happy to do that, but I find it this is something we could implement very fast that would be in line with the insurance compliance.
Yep, no, definitely thank you for that. And as I said, my proposal to you is if you can do, like on the order of the other recommendations that we do, something that where we recommend that ONC create a standard for price transparency, I and then we can submit it for the full task force consideration. Okay, let's move on to the next. So, any other comment on what's here on the slides now? All right, let's go on to the next one. So more terminology standards. I don't believe we've made. Oh yeah, so we soft pedaled, not soft pedaled, but we pointed back to our policy statement on procedural coding standards. So I think again, going back to the policy recommendations that we have, there's a wide range of options that ONC in coordination with CMS could take. I don't believe we made any other changes in these recommendations. Okay. Let's go on to the next one. Oh, go ahead, Clem.
I just worry a little bit. ONC can ensure that they're harmonized. You know, that's going to take two-way collaborations, and they've already fallen out. So that's a strong statement. It may not be in their power or encourage or something a little softer.
Well, that's why we say so there's a direct role for ONC with regard to USCDI and EHR certification, and then a coordinating role, which is coordination with CMS. CMS clearly holds the lion's share of the policy levers in this area.
No, I understand that. But how can those two organizations, or even NLM, ensure that the two things end up with a single source? I mean, they're at odds.
Which one are you talking about? Are you talking about 3D or 3E or 3F?
3E.
Working together for a couple of years, and then there was a big breakout because of really strong disagreements. And one is an international organization, but both of them are not in the U.S. So
I hear you.
Sure is a bit excess. It's too strong. To encourage or something like that, might be a better word.
I tend to believe that the U.S. is a, we're not Estonia, and with no disrespect to Estonia, we're a strong policy actor with regard to ITSIDU, with regard to WHO, we've got a good chunk of the world's population, and certainly more than our fair share of healthcare expenditure. Maybe ensure is the wrong word. If you've got an edit, I think that's fine. I do think it's useful for us to call for what we want, rather than just assume that, it's political and it's hard to do.
We actually are 62% of the membership fees for Snowman. Yep. But there's some very, I can't talk about it here, there's some very complex connection barriers.
Mm-hmm.
That NLM hasn't got any, it's not really in charge of the, it can't, anyway, it's complicated and not easily expressed. So I just think the insurer is putting a burden that can't be done.
Can we continue?
To encourage harmonization,
or to continue SNOMED CT and ICD-11 harmonization.
There's no harmonization now. No, they broke up.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like it's a pretty important recommendation.
I think,
it sounds like a pretty important recommendation. If you've got an alternative word to insure, I get your discomfort on insure, but
you don't want to Arian, these,
it. Yeah, go ahead, David.
These are none of what we write is binding in any way. They're just recommendations, and I think that insure captures the strength of our feelings about this should happen. So I'm not surprised or upset if insure is not how it's carried out, but I don't know that that means that we have to try to anticipate what's the right political word for how different agencies depend on the FACA input.
Right.
We're asked to give input, and we feel strongly about this.
Right. I think we're saying it would be dumb if SNOMED PT and IC11 were not harmonized, and as a nation that has adopted both SNOMED PT and ICD and will adopt IC11, we have a policy interest in seeing that they're harmonized. Whether they get harmonized at the end of the day is, as you say, a political question and something that, you know, requires work and requires right-thinking people to work together toward a common interest. So again, if you've got a good additional word, I don't want to soft pedal the recommendation, because I think we are saying it's something we want to see happen.
To lead to harmonization of SNOMED CT.
Okay, let's do some wordsmithing, maybe offline from the meeting, and then submit it for the full task force consideration.
Okay.
If we go on to the next slide. All right, health equity. I don't think we made any changes here. I don't think we made any changes here. Go on to the next slide. Here we did make changes. So elided all of the common research data models. We kept the rest of it. We were more consistent, thanks to David, in a common foundational research model. Harmonized to the common research data model. Those are the major changes, just more consistent language and less futile attempts to be exhaustive in enumerating existing research models.
And Arian, this is Cynthia. I'm sorry, I didn't raise my hand. Where is it that a patient can, a standard that's up front that a patient can opt in or opt out of having their data shared research and clinical data, and that is part of a standard.
That's right. Thanks, Cynthia. So that's in consent, the first bullet of 5C, and then we also make recommendations for the FHIR-based consent model that provides for patient participation and enrollment.
Can I raise my hand here, because this is a problem?
Please.
Part of the problem is that today, Epic Systems, for instance, at the Brigham Partners here in Boston, if you go in to sign in, they just give you a pen and you sign in on a digital form. You don't even ever get to see what you're signing, okay? If you ask to see it, they tell you go online, it's somewhere. So the consent form is a hurdle. You get blank signatures today. Now, when you go and get them to print it out and you go through all that trouble and they're giving you a hard time, it basically says that you consent, you know, to pay by penalty of law whatever they choose to charge you, and then you have to give Social Security, all sorts of identifiable information that should not be required. They ask for credit card information. And then on top of it, the consent for research is built into the payment on the same line of the signature. So you can't get services. You're actually denied. Sorry, my husband's making a cup of coffee behind me. But you're actually denied getting care if you refuse to consent on the information being shared. Okay, we've had this happen. We've had it happen among our employees, but we've also, you know, tried this with other patients that have come to us. And so unless you just say yes, you can't go forward. And that same form is the same signature in the Epic system, at least with the big hospitals here in Boston and down in Florida. We looked at some down in Florida as well. So I'm sure Epic has this built in. So I think when you say we've got consent, that consent is automatic yes, or else you can be denied care.
Yeah,
I kid you not. We've had people sent away because they didn't sign that form because it's linked with your insurance information and your agreement to pay for everything.
That's right. So I, first of all, I definitely acknowledge the point that you're raising. You know, other places where this becomes an issue is where you've got one long master set of authorizations and contracts that, for example, obligate you to sign up for out-of-network billing and things of that nature. Our role, so there's in various incarnations on the policy side, the policy committee back in the day, I don't know that the advisory committee has taken this up more formally, but the policy committee back in the day called for very intentional language around meaningful choice, exactly for the reasons that you're articulating. I think it's fair to say that the industry as a whole has not moved to a meaningful choice framework. Our role from a standards perspective is to make recommendations with regard to the enabling standards that enable meaningful choice. And there's a set of policy recommendations that, I think actually the national coordinator already has, that call for meaningful choice with regard to data sharing and information sharing that's sensitive to the kind of sharing that's being done. So just I absolutely acknowledge and agree with the point that you're making, and I think our role here is to make sure that we've got the places where consents and authorizations can be captured in a structured and computable way, and there's an accompanying policy piece that, Cynthia, I agree with you, it's probably worth doing another pass at as a full advisory committee. David, I don't know if you have any other comments here.
I would just throw it up that I do see that the consent is not clear, and you can't get services if you don't allow for it, okay? You cannot,
yeah,
you're denied.
Cynthia.
And so
Cynthia.
Just on this hand, like, just wait, stay with me. As a standard, I think we should make things very obvious for the patients to be able to opt in and opt out as a choice without being, you know, to without being denied care or have it be automatic. That it's linked in, because this is very serious. If people don't, they should have the right to opt out or opt in.
Completely agree with you. And as I said, I think the language we've used is meaningful choice. So I should be able to make meaningful choice. So opt in, opt out can be all or nothing, or it can be tailored and meaningful. As I said, I think we generally agreed in the meaningful choice standard. Clem, I see your hand is raised.
Well, Dave was waving. Let him
okay.
Assert what he wanted to say first.
I just agree with what Arian said. I think this is a policy issue. It's got governing law under the Common Rule and under HIPAA to determine whether what those hospitals are doing is legal or not legal. It's not a standards compliance issue. It's a policy and legal issue. You can't consent away a legal right. If their behaviors need to be challenge them on the policy front. We can't fix it with
a
standard.
Yeah, but it's been built into the Epic system, the way they handle it,
yeah,
which you've seen in the majority.
That's,
you know, it's built how
that's
Epic
not a standard.
Has unraveled it.
Yeah. Fortunately, this guy named Mickey Tripathi was the co-chair of the Privacy and Security Tiger Team. I think you'll actually find that was actually on the I think you'll find a receptive audience for this notion of meaningful choice with regard to how the consent and authorizations are called for. I'm going to go to Clem and Cynthia. I'm going to do a link to the privacy and security Tiger Team's recommendations. I don't know if David, if you can there's been so many good Tiger Team recommendations back in the day. Clem, go ahead.
First, just a couple of clarifications. I don't think if there is that the consent says you can do supplement research, it does not allow anything like invasive or randomized trials or anything. I'm not sure what it is, but it's not the big deal, invasive studies. But what I wanted to point out, though, is that there's a couple things. You say we should work to harmonize to the common research data model. It's not different. I don't know what you're saying because there's no words in here that say what it is.
Yeah. So this is an accompanying recommendation to 5A. Evaluate, develop, and harmonize to a common foundational research model, maps to the US CDI, and then 5B, harmonize to the
US CDI. Okay. All right. I missed that.
Yep.
And then the second thing is the separation of research and the clinical data. That actually, I don't know what that means, but currently, it's like oil and water. They are, you know, they're different systems. There's a research system. I'm not sure what you're trying to get to there. I guess the third one is the terminology for pre-approved new clinical entities. These are drugs that have been approved. I thought that was already happening.
The intent here, we're just pulling the recommendations out, but there is accompanying text in the transmittal letter. Our intent here is not to focus on sponsored clinical research for NCEs or for phase four trials for approved entities. This is for real world evidence recovery like trials and comparative effectiveness or what Les called pragmatic clinical trials. Mm-hmm. That are primarily conducted using clinical data captured in EHRs, but in both a prospective and a retrospective approach as opposed to something captured in the EDC system.
You need to clarify which of these things don't have terminology. I think they all do. The FDA has a device thing that you got to get identified. Chemical entities are located in a couple places, including the FDA has chemical sub. I mean, so I don't think we're missing terminology,
So the issue on terminology for pre-approval new chemical entities is the point that if I use RX Norm as my coding system or if I use one of the commercial medication databases as my coding system for documenting medications, I don't have a way to document in the chart exposure to a pre-approval NCE.
And we're calling for solution to these problems, not trying to define the specific solution. And in some cases, if it's essentially solved, then that's great. If it needs a lot of work, at least people are aware that it's part of what has to be solved in order to enable this pragmatic research.
Why don't we say we're missing, we're lacking, or we're absent?
Well, I think that just goes without saying. I mean, you should breathe as long as you can. I don't know. It seems like
we're not. If you read the recommendations here, we're not saying that there are gaps in each of these areas. We're saying that we recommend that ONC create sections in the ISA and work with stakeholders to develop, test, and promulgate standards and implementation guidance for representation and implementation of pragmatic research studies within EHRs. And priority areas of opportunity include the following. So this may be, Clem, to your point, as simple as here's the sections in RX Norm where NCEs are captured and where the standards for those NCEs are maintained and cross-linked in the RX Norm and the NLM and the UMLS. We got this FDA database over here, and we've got RX Norm, and here's the work that's going to reconcile the two of them. And we're intentionally being policy oriented as opposed to driving down to that level of detail.
Well, I still think it's misleading because, I mean, you can't, you're not going to get everything at RX Home. Devices aren't part of it, for example.
Right, which is why we also...
I mean, there is a device code system.
Same thing for biologics and devices. I'm going to suggest that if you got some wording suggestion, I think we're happy to hear it.
I think I would say where they're lacking because I think it's misleading now.
Yeah, what we're calling for is for this to be in the ISA.
Understand, but the other thing, chemical entities in general are not approved. You know, I mean, there's 50 million of them or something like that, and they're coded in
NCE is just a term of art for pre-approval, as you know, pre-approval small compounds. But again, I don't think we're saying there's a gap. I think we're saying that it's a priority area for listing. And if it's not a gap, as David mentioned, it's just an easy call out to here's how to do it, which is the one of the major points of the ISA. Sorry, the ISA. Yeah. One of the major points of the ISA is that it's a convenient compendium of here's how to go do X.
Yeah, but why still not say we're lacking or we're absent? Because it makes
I don't think we want to say that it should be in the ISA we're absent, right? I think we want to say it should be the ISA. The ISA is the place to go for things that are being worked on, but it's also the place to go to get the current reference for what to do. Right?
Well, I think it makes us look ignorant.
Okay. Why don't we move on and you know, Clint, if you've got some language change, you know, I don't think we want to say we're absent because again, I think the goal of the ISA is to list we're present or absent. If you've got, for example, a pointer to the crosslinks between FDA registration of new chemical entities and RX norm, that would be useful content to go along with this so that we can it's easier for everyone.
Well, the RX norm makes no pretense of going beyond drugs.
But we don't, again, that's an example of the kind of challenge that we're pointing to is that if I want to document in my EHR a patient who's on a pre-approval medication, I need a way to do that with that it's got harmonized terminology. Same thing for devices. I need to make sure that the device registration and device ordering catalog that I have is inclusive both of pre-approval and approved devices. Why don't we move on? Let's go on to the next slide. I do not believe we made any changes here. Okie doke. Let's go on to the next slide. And I do not believe we made any changes here. So I think that's it. We might be worthwhile if we have the technical means to do so to go to the transmittal letter and cover the high level recommendations because in many cases, much of the work that we did was to go over those high level recommendations and make sure they're consistent with the cross-linked information. Perfect, thank you. If we go down to the bottom here, we made consistent this section to make sure that we're calling out the right fire standards and resources. So go into the next slide. Or next page, sorry. Same thing for B and C here. Recommendation mapping of USCD and FHIR 2, this really should be a common research model instead of the common research model because we have yet to talk about the common research model. So maybe a note for 02. Okay.
Slow down a little bit. I'm not sure that any of the vocabulary standards are consistent with the ORB. I'm not sure exactly how it's defined.
Which
Well, you know, some of the technical consensus standards have very, very meticulous checks on every step of the way. And when you get, you know, 20,000 new terms coming out in a year or 10,000, whatever, that hasn't happened in any of the vocabulary standards where, you know, everybody votes on every additional term. I'm just a little worried. I don't know for sure what's in the circular. I know it says it encourages them. I don't know how tightly it defines voluntary consensus standards.
Maybe we can actually go pull up the circular, the language and voluntary consensus.
But it is what it is. It's issued.
So that's whatever
strength the circular has.
The language here, darn it.
I thought it mostly said that we should be supportive of consensus standards in general. And I don't recall it mentioning vocabulary standards specifically. And organizations participate.
We're calling for use of voluntary consensus standards. So the language, this is an OMB circular A119 as revised, subsection I. Voluntary consensus standards are standards developed or used by voluntary consensus standard bodies, both domestic and international, which are made available in a manner which includes provisions requiring the owners of relevant IP have agreed to make that IP available. And in J, domestic or international organizations which plan, develop, establish, or coordinate voluntary standards using agreed-upon procedures, may include nonprofit organizations, industry organizations, accredited standards development, professionally, yada, yada, yada. A voluntary consensus standard body observes principles such as openness, balance of interest, and due process, operate by consensus, which is characterized by the absence of sustained opposition to substantial issues by any important part of the concerned interest. So consensus requires that all views and objections be considered and an effort being made toward their resolution. So wait, just to be clear, Clint, it's not calling for a vote on every piece of terminology. It's calling for a method for dispute resolution.
HL 7, ANSI has the tight definitions. It's very important in general. I think it's okay, but I'm not sure that any of the terminology activities could literally follow, because follow that spec.
Yeah, you'd have to. That's right. You have to put your policies and procedures that are relevant for the terminology that you're working on.
That's got motherhood. I can't be against that.
Yep. It just turns out that we mostly follow it, but not always, and not consistently. And there are some vocabularies right now that I'm not sure I could point to the policies and procedures and balance of interest. Let's go on to we just made that section consistent. I can scroll. I've got the power. That's fantastic. We didn't make any changes to 04. 05 and 06, we streamlined and I remember, David, that we did place 5 up anyway.
This is one that you reordered this, and I was puzzled by it. So it's possible that it's misordered.
Okay.
It was a late ping between you and me, and you changed the location of.
That's right. I was trying to place 5 closer to 2.
This is Wanda.
Yep.
I actually reordered it based upon the. The ordering of the recommendation.
Gotcha. I hear you.
That we have at the bottom from 1 to 7. So
yeah, it's just that thank you for that. So we just confusingly in this set of recommendations call for common research model. And I'll put a cross reference to recommendation 4. Thank you for that explanation. Okay. But most of what we did here is just make this consistent with the detailed recommendations. Nothing there, and nothing there. So these are our high level, seven high level recommendations that map to the detailed recommendations. So I'm going to pause. Okay. All right. Are there any other comments? So let me just capture the notes that I've got for what we're going to do. I think Cynthia is going to propose a streamlined recommendation relating to data files for price transparency and standards for those existing data files for organizations that are mapping to the CMS regulation. Clem is going to contemplate potential changes to the word ensure, and also to see if we can better characterize what we're calling for relative to NCE and device standards. Again, just the point being that we need consistent terminology and mapping so that I can document the use of research medications in the EHR. And then high-level recommendations, we're going to cross-reference.
So, just a small interruption, because research medications is a different thing than pre-approved.
Thank you for that. So I do mean pre-approved. I mean things that are not listed in the approved drug list, which is usually where the major drug vocabulary systems pull their list from. And again, maybe this is already solved and we've already got it, and so we're calling for something.
Well, I want to emphasize it would be helpful mm-hmm. to have you to identify research medications randomized. I mean, they may be the placebo or the drug. That's a tougher problem because they aren't anybody's, they're just local whatever. I guess they probably have internal drug company codes.
Mm-hmm. They usually have internal drug company codes, but there's some IND registration of that allows them to be used in human research subjects.
And they're blinded, so you don't know.
You sometimes don't know. Sometimes you've got blinded issues. Again, what we're calling for here is let's figure out some ways so that we can have standardized documentation in the EHR. Okay, so again, cross-referencing recommendation 2 to recommendation 4, and in the high-level recommendations, I think that's it in terms of edits for these recommendations. I'm going to pause a few beats to see if anybody has anything burning. And then, as I said, from a procedure and work perspective, I would like to close the recommendations out by Friday so that we can disseminate them to the full HITAC for pre-read relative to the approval on Thursday. So that would be the goal. Push comes to shove, we will absolutely get them out on Monday morning. So, if there's a reason that we're in the last minute editing and need to do it over the weekend, we will. But I prefer to get it out by Friday evening in order to give ONC the appropriate amount of time to disseminate them for the full HITAC. And with that, I think, Cassandra, we're going to turn it over to you for public comment.
Sure. Can you bring up the public comment slide, Katie? Great. Operator, can you open the line, please?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause for one moment to poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Okie doke. Thank you very much. So again, I think we've got a pretty well-defined set of work items. We'd like to get this closed out by tomorrow. I want to thank the task force for a tremendous amount of work in a very, very short amount of time to put together what at least reads to me as a well-done set of recommendations that should be maximally useful to ONC. And with that, I'd like to give everybody back half an hour.
Could I get a 1 minute more?
Sure,
more?
Please. Good fun.
Yeah, I think it would be useful to read over where NCVHS stands on. They have some of the same points, I think, but
mm-hmm.
I haven't seen recently. It would be more powerful if we kind of aligned with them a little better. I don't know if we don't align with them.
Yeah.
The ICAT
task force was even though it was done under the auspices of the HITACH, had about half the membership that was from NCVHS, and that report was read back out to NCVHS. My personal view is that ONC and HHS should start moving NCVHS and the HITACH closer together because we do make recommendations in very similar areas. And we're the two most notable advisory committees that make advice on standard certification of vocabulary standards. But that level of coordination alignment has been done. And Clem, I think I'd also do the callaway point to read this report back out to NCVHS. I think that would be a useful coordination point. We are going to coordinate with the USCDI task force. As well, because I think there's a number of recommendations that we made that have some cross-linkage to USCDI, but Clem, I think that's a great call-out.
Yeah, I think we are probably pretty close. I just haven't read it most recently.
Yep. Cool. All right. With that, let us give ourselves officially an extra half hour.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.